Blog Talk Radio.
Yo.
Hey, we're live.
Oh, we are. Okay. Hey, how you doing?
Control music.
Rich Bergeron here.
Yo, this is the Tornado Tony Pentacal.
We're coming at you with another live edition of the Combat Sports Talk Show here, Fight News Unlimited. And we call it Fight Talk Unlimited sometimes. We got two special guests tonight from Grudge Fighters. Justin Salas, who's a seven-time UFC, or is fighting seven-time UFC veteran Rob Emerson on January 29th, and also UFC veteran Alvin Robinson, who's fighting UFC veteran Cameron Dollar on February 25th. So we're going to get a couple MMA guys on here tonight. And speaking of MMA, Tony, I don't know if you remember a young lady named Hot Stuff Holly Dunaway. Remember her?
Sure, I know the name. I don't know her personally, but
She was one of my earliest interviews when I just had a MySpace page. And Hot Stuff Holly has a pretty interesting story. Not to mention, I think it was either Penthouse or Playboy she just posed for.
Wow.
So she really is hot. I can vouch for that. I saw the pictures, and they're nice. Anyway, she is going to be going into MMA, or so the rumors are circulating. So there's your top-level boxer female going into MMA, and she's hot, so I think she could potentially be the next Gina Carano. And we'll see. Gina had more of a Muay Thai background than boxing when she came into the sport, but I think Holly is much hotter. We'll have to get her on the show again, because I think it was a really good interview the first time around, and she really liked it. So we were with her back in the day, and when she's a hot topic, I'm sure she'll remember that. But also in the news, in the UFC, the male fighters, the heavyweights, we have Brock Lesnar and Junior Dos Santos now announced as the next season of the Ultimate Fighter's coaches. And it's going to be welterweights this year, starting in March, the filming. And it's going to be 6 weeks. And so that kind of dispels all the rumors that Brock Lesnar is leaving for the WWE. And Dana White actually publicly came out and said flat out that those rumors were bunk. There was no truth to them whatsoever, that he was even considering going back to the WWE. So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you should look at it this way, Rich. Yeah, only guy that would have, you know, won out of that whole situation would have been Vince McMahon. Because people would have bought that, you know. But then the fans would have been lose for the fans, and it would have been a lose-lose for the participants. Because you look at it this way. Okay, and I said this a few weeks ago. You got The Undertaker, and every year for WrestleMania, they count his undefeated streak at WrestleMania. Undertaker, 15-0, he's 16-0, he's whatever and 0 at WrestleMania. Could this be the year he loses it? Fine. So they make a big deal out of that every year. The same they do a legitimate fight between him and Brock Lesnar. Most likely, Lesnar is a younger guy. You know, he's more trained in that type of fighting. Advantage goes to Lesnar. Now, they do a regular, what they call a shoot fight, which is a non-scripted bout. Lesnar wins. Well, now you lose the Undertaker's undefeated streak. So now you lost that big marketing hook every year for WrestleMania. Now, say you put it on as a scripted, you know, event. And, okay, Undertaker beats Lesnar. It's a farce, you know. I'm not saying, you know, that the Undertaker, you know, wouldn't have a chance. But obviously the odds would be faced towards Lesnar. So now they build up this whole thing, and it ends up being a ripoff. This isn't back in, like, the 1970s or 1980s when wrestling, even though it was entertainment, was portrayed as being real. The fans know it's scripted now, and that would be like a way you're trying to tell them that you're going to have a legitimate match, and then script it anyway.
Right.
That would turn a lot of people off. Granted, McMahon would make a lot of money on a one-time deal, but I think you end up losing a lot of people in the long run that, you know, felt they were on a button hook.
Right. Yeah, I never saw the possibility of that. And I always thought from the very beginning, the first time I saw that video, that the jump to conclusions, that all that talk that The Undertaker was being very vague about meant automatically that it had something to do with Brock going back to the WWE. And it was just so vague, you know, like, do you want to do it? How much more vague can you get? You know, what?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, and the other thing is, like, I mean, you say to a guy, hey, do you want to do it? You know, you want to go? Or whatever, like, his terminology was, you want to do it? Well,
one thing, if
that would be like,
you know,
that would be like, you know, a guy sitting in the crowd at Tokyo saying that to Mike Tyson after the Buster Douglas fight. Wasn't the best night to throw down a challenge. You know, I mean, if it was in Atlantic, like, say, Vander Holyfield was in Atlantic City the night Mike Tyson knocked out Michael Spinks and said, hey, you want to do it? Yeah, okay, that's pretty legit. But you say it to a guy after, you know, he just took a pretty frightful beating, it doesn't have the same oomph to it.
But Junior Dos Santos actually is coming off a fight. Last fight I saw him in was against Roy Nelson. And Roy Nelson, big country, big Burger King country. And Nelson's actually had some difficulties with his contract situation. Apparently, Roy Jones Jr. somehow owned his contract even while he was fighting with the UFC. So there is a suit filed.
Oh, Pennsylvania guys, that kind of makes sense.
Yeah. So there were some issues. I think they've been hammered out. I think Roy's going to be coming back to fight with the UFC this year. But anyway, Junior Dos Santos and Brock Lesnar fight is going to be interesting because Roy Nelson is an excellent boxer with a great jab, and he showed that he has a jaw like no other and took an incredible beating in that fight from Dos Santos, but he waded through it all. He went all three rounds. But against a guy like Brock Lesnar, who's more muscled than fat, he might not have as great boxing skills as Nelson does, but you know, if he gets as dynamic as he was in the early going in that Cain Velasquez fight, and he keeps working on the well-roundedness of his game, I think that'll be a great fight. And it's been rumored that it was for the interim heavyweight championship because Cain Velasquez is going to be out for a certain period due to a shoulder injury, rotator cuff. So, that was shot down recently in the same article I read it in. It's like, okay. There was an update posted. And, oh, yeah, this isn't true. But anyway, there's now set up so that the winner of the Brock Lesnar versus Junior Dos Santos fight that will happen sometime in June, I guess, at the end of the series, the winner will go against Cain Velasquez, since he's out for an indefinite period. So everything worked out to put the heavyweights back in charge again in the camps. And the only real controversy now is a lot of people saying that, well, what does Brock Lesnar know? What can he coach? And that, I mean, I have to give Dana White credit. He actually had a great quote. He said, that's the stupidest thing I ever heard. Because
yeah.
Brock Lesnar is like an unbelievable wrestler. He's like a world-class wrestler, even though he never went to the Olympics, I don't think. But he was like a college standout and national champion a few times. So the wrestling alone is worth the lessons from him. And, you know, plus, you know, whatever he learns in professional wrestling, then he could shoot over to this. But then, you know, you consider all the other coaches that he brought in to teach him the rest of the stuff from the ground up and become a champion. Obviously, he has some good people in place. So, you know, these people that are out there saying, well, he has no experience in coaching and he's not going to be a good coach before they even see him coach one day and before they even consider, like, who he has for coaches that he's going to be bringing in, I think that's pretty dim-witted, I guess you'd say. But the MMA, some of the mainstream reporters, they just don't think about the logical aspect of these situations, you know, like, you know, they've watched every season. They're rabid fans, but they don't even stop to think about, well, who are his coaches? You know, I read these articles where they just rip Brock to shreds, and there's no mention of who his coaches are. You know, what they've done with him to take him from a fake sport to a world champion in the UFC in like a matter of a few years, when some of these guys have been training their whole lives. So I think the coaching argument is blown out of the water by logic when you look at it that way. I think he'll be a great coach, and he's said to be like kind of a private person, but it's a 6-week training camp. It's going to be his opportunity to really get the spotlight again, and it'll be better than the WWE. I mean, this is like a reality show, and it's Ultimate Fighting. I think it's going to be, pretty soon, if it's not already, it's going to be at a point where WWE is going out of business or looking at it, because there's no market for that anymore, I don't think, you know? It's a fading market. I shouldn't say there's no market, but I think there's going to be more of a market in the future for MMA than there is for WWE, and Brock knows that, and I don't think he ever considered it in the first place. I don't even think it was ever a real part of the story, but he was a face of that industry, you know, and that was based on entertainment, and he doesn't get to really do a lot of entertainment anymore in the cage, except for forget up fighting. So I think he's going to enjoy the opportunity. He's going to stand out, and people are going to like him. They're going to want to see him more and more actually fight in the UFC, and it's going to be a career for him. And Dana White, I think, really wants to make that statement by putting him out there. Because if you consider it, you know, like, he's one of their highest paid fighters. He's one of the most widely known. You know, he wants to put him front and center out there. And I think that's why it makes a lot of sense to put him in the show. You know, to kind of make the fans want to see him even more in the octagon. You know, and get on his bandwagon, so to speak, and want to pay to see him in the future. So he's making a big commitment. Brock Lesnar is making a big commitment to the UFC. And one of the clips that I love to replay, after one of his first fights, Brock Lesnar said, you know, screw Bud Light, I'm going to go home and drink a Coors Light because Bud Light didn't pay me enough. And I might even get on top of my wife. Oh, and that, it was like, you could tell he missed those old glory days of WWE, where he could just go off on a tangent and be the badass character, you know, that he wanted to be. And, you know, the Ultimate Fighter show, of course, is on free TV or cable TV there. Cable in your area, but basic cable. It's on the Versus Network. I mean, not Versus, Spike TV, so they don't have swears and all that stuff and vulgar language, but.
Damn it.
They bleep out all the swears, so it's kind of interesting in that respect. Well, I don't know. I think it's going to be good. I think Dos Santos, I think, is a much quieter guy when it comes to that sort of thing. But they could be two dynamic coaches and personalities. We never know. We don't know. We don't really know. We'll find out. But I'm looking forward to it. You know, I hate these people who are out there saying that it's going to be junk because Brock's never coached before. Dude, how many fighters that come on to coach have actually coached before? Come on. You know, give me a break. Anyway, that dispels all the myths of some of the other people that they were thinking about picking. Of course, that whole situation with the Frankie Edgar and Gray Maynard tie didn't help things for his being picked. Maybe next year. But it's going to be the heavyweights coach in the welterweight, so should be interesting.
Well, you look at it this way, you know. Kevin Rooney was a welterweight title challenger. And that being the lead trainer for Mike Tyson, he did a pretty damn good job. Then you got stuff like Eddie Futch. Eddie Futch is a tiny guy who's a lightweight. And then training guys like Joe Frazier and Riddick Bowe. And then you got other, you know, situations. I've seen some pretty damn big guys. And I'm talking about boxing now. I mean, okay, it's a little bit different. But I've seen some pretty damn big guys train some pretty damn small little guys.
Yeah, my cross-country coach in high school was a fat bastard. He was a big guy, and I was always like trying to give him that look like, all right, yeah, you must have run 7 miles today, huh? When's the last time you ran 500 feet? and it's like it always reminded me of the old Mike Tyson's punch out clip of the training when the fat guy's on the bike and
yeah
the guy's running.
You know they stole that from, right?
What?
Rocky III.
Oh, yeah.
Before he died, Mick was riding the bike, and Rocky was, running.
Mm-hmm.
So I think actually Rocky was pulling Mick on the bike.
Maybe.
I don't remember how that works.
Well, boxing, the big story this week in USA Today, that was posted yesterday, actually, is the fight between Devin Alexander and Timothy Bradley.
This is a good fight.
January 29th, junior welterweights.
I'm very much looking forward to it.
Bradley is 26-0, and Alexander is 21-0. And it's the WBC and WBO titles on the line. It's going to be on HBO at 10 p.m.
you look at it this way. I'm looking for that. So it's going to be an HBO. Should be a very exciting fight. There's no football on that weekend, so God knows what I'm going to do. But for me, there's no more football on this year, so God knows what I'm going to do. But get this fight, Bradley and Alexander. Now, Alexander obviously has, the better punching power. The guy knocked out, what the hell's the guy's name? He'd never been, down before in his career. I can't remember it off the top of my head. I don't have Bochek in front of me. Single uppercut, down and out.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the guy's a very, very talented puncher. But then you got Bradley, who was just, I believe, a step ahead in every other category, with the exception of power. He's, a better boxer, a little bit faster. He's got better technical skills. I think the only thing he really lacks is true punching power. And another thing, if you ever watch any Bradley fights up close, I'm going to tell you exactly what he's going to do. Bradley's generally the shorter guy. Shaved head reminds me of who was the guy I was trying to just compare him with? But he uses the top of that head as a battering ram sometimes. He'll get in low and he'll duck his head. That reminds me a little bit of a smaller Evander Holyfield. That's what I wanted to say. Especially when Holyfield was fighting Tyson. Not the Holyfield thing. He just kind of bent his head down and, used it as a third glove, really. And I think Bradley is going to get inside and he's going to really rough Alexander up in there, using his better technique, his faster hands, and, his third glove. And I think that's going to be the difference.
All right. Yeah, it should be interesting. And I bet it's going to be a situation where, the old boxing is dying talk is going to get kicked to the curb. Because it's going to be one of those fights that just is an incredible show. And showdown, really. These guys are undefeated. They're going in there. They're putting a lot of risk. Fighting the best of the best, each other. Yeah, and I think it's going to be one of those fights that makes people go, well, maybe we don't really need to see Manny versus Mayweather.
Well, and honestly, this is a fight that I hope a lot of people tune into HBO to watch, because you're going to get two fighters at the top of the game, both very talented. There's a chance to see some really good fight.
The other thing that I'm actually going to be writing an article about, a few minutes here to talk about before we get Justin Salas on the phone. But there's a lot of buzz about tournaments lately, boxing. The Super 6 tournament was a little weird because you had a lot of people drop out of it and change hands, but it's proved to be a pretty interesting format, and it's been spread over time, whereas over in the UK, I've noticed there's a lot of movement towards one night or 2 month tournaments. The prize fighter tournament over there is huge. It's getting to be, they're doing seasons of this prize fighter with all kinds of different weights, and getting the best of the best in the world to participate. And it's a one night thing. They fight three or four rounds at a time, and boom, they get, the winner gets the big cup and the trophy and big prize money. It's a pretty decent format, especially for the UK. They get some attention over there. And I publish stuff on it all the time because they have such good PR. They keep in touch with me and send me everything that they have. And, of course, I get all that stuff from Gianluca De Caro there, Rio. Steve Cunningham is doing a lot of stuff over there, too, lately. But anyway, the whole idea of the tournament, I've been kind of interested in since back in 2006 when I first got into writing about boxing and a little bit about MMA. The Super Fighter Tournament really made me kind of think, wow, that's a great idea in the post-Tyson era to get heavyweights involved. Because there was supposed to be a four-round elimination system, the prize of $5 million for 8 of the top heavyweights to participate in. and there were so many different stars involved, and there was like Angelo Dundee, George Foreman, all these people on this big video talking about how great this was going to be, and they were going to do it in Australia, and then it never happened. And Sam Peter was involved, Jameel McCline, Oliver McCall, Chris Bird, Cap Brock. And it's never really been resurrected, but the closest thing to a, you know, a real nice tournament style event was you know, the whole deal with the Super Six here in America. You know, of course they did it all over the world, but they really need something like a contender show, you know, like the Ultimate Fighter for boxing, where there's a tournament-style event that takes place in different venues in America, and the best of the best are attracted to it. You know, of course, the Super Six is a good example, but I think that's way too protracted. You know, it's great for Showtime and all. It's a nice thing. I think they should continue it, but I think they also need some other type of thing that's like this idea, the Super Fighter. There was nothing wrong with the idea. It was just the contract situations were a little rough to deal with, and the belts and sanctioning were tough. And then the passports alone became issues because it was in Australia. So, and a lot of these guys are from America or different countries. But anyway, I think that would really get the heavyweight division back on the map if they could do a Super Fighter. For real. What do you think?
I'll see why not.
And it's even got a Wikipedia page. It was supposed to happen. It's out there. 4-round elimination system, $5 million prize. It's not bad. Could be done. Should be done. But we'll see. Anyway, our next guest we're going to have on here is Justin Salas. And he's going to be fighting a pretty tough guy in Rob Emerson on January 29th, the same day that the Bradley Alexander fight is going to be. So, big choice. What are you going to watch? Now, I don't know if this one's going to be on TV where he fights now, but it's MSC. There's a lot of UFC veterans kicking around out there. They just actually wrote an article on opposingviews.com not too long ago about how the UFC has been throwing out so many guys, you know, especially now that they've merged with the WEC. Seems like, you know, 3 or 4 guys each card can run the risk of being thrown out of the UFC if they lose or don't put on a show. And, you know, I think that kind of sets a dangerous trend, you know, to throw these people out, you know, without giving them a chance, number one, to have a turnaround, have a comeback in their career, and number two, without consideration for, you know, what makes a show. You know, does it mean you had a bad fight if you didn't put on a show? Not always, you know. The whole idea of fighters putting on a show, I think, makes it to be more of a violent situation, you know. These guys want to promote violence rather than actual fights, you know. A fight shouldn't be prompted to go one way or another, you know. It shouldn't have to be a show. Of course, guys, you know, if they want to please the crowd, they're going to put on a show. But to put monetary, you know, bonuses on stuff that, and have a guy's career rest on stuff like that. But, you know, if you don't put on a show, you get thrown out and you don't have a chance of getting a bonus. And all those factors combined kind of makes it more promoting of violence that the crowd is going to cheer for, you know. Not that it's not supposed to be a violent sport, but, you know, that's just going to promote way more injuries than it would is if you just let these guys fight their fights, you know. Sometimes it's strategy, sometimes it's a lot of rolling around on the ground, you know. And sometimes you got to consider your own safety when you get in there in the cage. Even though it's kind of ridiculous, you know, why are you getting in a cage to fight if you're considering your safety?
Right.
But it's just, it just seems to me like it could be a slippery slope in the long run if they keep doing this. You know? But that's just me. They kicked out a lot of guys in their last card, so that's what made me want to kind of rail against it. It's just, it seems like, you know, it's one of those policies that needs changing, just like the whole pay scale structure and all that, which I've talked about. But let's get Justin on the phone and see what he thinks about his MMA career. Hi, Justin?
Yeah.
Hey, this is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron. How's it going?
Excuse me?
This is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron from Fight News Unlimited.
All right.
We're live
on
the air. How's it going?
Okay, sorry about that. I couldn't hear you. I had a bunch of people around me.
Oh. We got Tony the Tornado Pinnacle on the line, too.
Yo, what's up? How's
it going?
Good.
Now, you got a big fight coming up here against a UFC veteran?
Right, I got a fight the 29th against former UFC guy Rod Emerson. Big fight for me.
All right. And what have you been doing to prepare for that matchup?
Well, I've been in a 9-week camp. Recently, I just got back from Greg Jackson's camp.
Cool.
Down in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And, you know, I've been doing a lot of sparring, lots of work with some of the top guys around, you know. Down there, I got to spar people like Donald Cerrone, Melvin Guard, a lot of guys up at that UFC, WEC championship level, and just kind of seeing where I stand and keep getting my confidence high to know that I can, you know, I belong here and I can compete with these guys.
All right. And what was that like, meeting the Greg Jackson and being part of his camp down there?
Well, I've been exposed to him, you know, up here in Denver. I train at the Grudge, where we do a lot of intermixing with the TriStar up in Canada, also Greg Jackson's camp. So wasn't the first time I've met him, but first time I've actually got to go down to the New Mexico camp and experience, you know, the atmosphere down there, lots of studs everywhere. So you're getting top-notch training partners every day, every round. And, you know, there's just intensity in the air down there with all those guys around, so it definitely brings out the best in you as a in your training. And but you know, I get the same thing here at the Grudge, but it's nice to get out of your comfort zone once in a while. You know, I'm used to Denver, and I wanted to get out of my comfort zone, have some different guys coming at me, and you know, see what my holes are, see what's working for me against other people, you know.
Right.
Well, I can imagine it being pretty hot down there too when you're training, even in the wintertime. Like I said, I've never been down to the Southwest before, but I can just imagine it really cranking up down there being a good training environment.
Yeah, it definitely is. It actually, you know, New Mexico is actually just below us in elevation. So when we were down there was actually, it was cool weather. Wasn't real hot. I know it gets real hot there in the summer, but they still got a decent altitude down there. Not quite as good as here up in Denver, but I don't know exactly what their altitude is there, but it was cool. It was you could kind of feel the winter air, you know. It was like right around below 30 degrees.
It was funny because we were talking the other day. I was talking to you know, my father, you know, and it was just completely what we weren't even talking about, you know, training for, you know, any type of competition for martial arts or anything. But he was telling me back when he was around 40 years old, he had gone to Montana on a hunting trip with a lot of hiking through the mountains. And he said, you know, the guys that took him on the trip, they were really running him around pretty good. He said that these guys were really trying to impress everybody, you know, climbing these mountains in that thin air. And he goes, there were days, I thought I was going to die. He goes, I would love to take them, you know, to one of my northeast, you know, type of hunts, which is a lot, you know, it was a different kind of cold with a heavier air and with, you know, a lot of sitting still instead of a lot of running around, and see how they could handle it. And like I said, everybody's like, you learn from your environment, and that's why it's always good to, you know, change environment no matter what you're training for.
Right. Yeah. I mean, environment does play a role. And I've been pretty lucky. I grew up as a young boy in Wyoming. I was a country boy. So I grew up at high altitude. And I actually wrestled at high altitude for the University of Wyoming. And now I'm training at high altitude still. But I can imagine the air is different. You know, on the coast, a lot thicker. And that cold is a lot more piercing, you know, with the thicker air. And I think that does play a part. And but I'm glad the area I'm at high altitude. And so when I see friends and other fighters come into our camp from, you know, from the coast, from California, and I know it takes them a week or so to get their bearings back, you know, we had a kid come out from San Diego to train with us, and he's from the low elevation, and he came out and he said, man, I've been preparing for this run and doing everything. I don't know why I'm so tired. And I was like, you've never changed the altitude. You've never been in the difference of altitude, have you? And he's like, I didn't even think about that, you know, and it does. It makes a difference for everyone. So something we all got to think about when we change our region, you know, where we're competing and stuff.
Oh, absolutely. One of my tougher experiences actually in a boxing ring, and I'm going back about a good 13 years, was I flew out from mid. I'm a Philadelphia guy. I'm an East Coast guy, and I was at the time in Central Pennsylvania. That's where I went to school, and
okay.
I was fighting. In fact, you being into wrestling, you might know the school, Lock Haven University, big
right,
time.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where I went. What'd you say there?
I said that's where a good wrestler, Terry Kolak, came from there.
Terry Kolak was a friend of mine there.
Oh, right on. Yeah, he's a stud, man. He's a killer.
Yeah, he went to the Olympics, and he should have won. He got ripped off against the Iranian kid. Yeah, Carrie was about two grades above me. So when I first got there, and like I knew the name, obviously, and I think it was his first year when he transferred from Penn State. Was my first year there, and so he happened to be him. He and I were in a couple of the same classes. It's general class, like you had the intro to psych and stuff like that. Well, Carrie and I were in that together, and you know he always would give me tips, even though I was, you know, on how to cut weight because I had to do that for boxing. I'd never done it before. So when I was in Lock Haven, my senior year, they fly me out to University of Nevada, Reno for a big fight out there. And but talk about not only being jet lagged, but being altitude lagged. Because I got there less than 24 hours before the fight. I'm trying to adjust with a three-hour time difference and just a much thinner air. And that's what got me in the third round.
Right.
I've never seen something like that before.
Yeah, it's definitely a difference. And, you know, I can feel it in the reverse way. And, you know, I always think about that and plan for that. And, you know, I always warn my buddies about it.
I'm going to ask you another question with regards to amateur wrestling. I don't know if you know the name or even know the guy. He was a wrestling coach, world known for a long time. And then he went into boxing. He was a boxing coach at Lock Haven University, Dr. Ken Cox.
You know the name? I'm not for sure. I don't recognize the name right offhand. I don't know if I've ever experienced him in my wrestling career.
Okay. Yeah, Dr. Cox, you figure he started running the boxing program at Lock Haven in 1978. So by the time I got there in 1994, he was already, you figure, 16 years into the program, and he's still there. I mean, this is his 33rd year doing it. But he was a very, very well-known, amateur wrestling coach. So, of course, you know, we would sit there and we'd be going on boxing trips, but he would be talking about a lot of, amateur collegiate style, Olympic style wrestling. And, of course, you know, he would tell us stories about, always talking about Terry Kolak. He would bring us down to the Lock Haven wrestling room with Coach Rocky Bonomo and those guys and have us watch how they trained. a lot of times Bonomo would bring up the wrestling team to the boxing room, watch how we train. But he would always talk about, you know, guys like Kurt Angle, Dave Schultz. In fact, it was when Dave Schultz was murdered by John DuPont, it was like the day after it happened, we were all going on a boxing trip together when Dr. Cox got the news. And, you know, you could tell he was pretty shaken up right from there on the spot. One of his favorite stories I tell Rich all the time is he used to go to Russia for a lot of clinics in wrestling. Obviously, Russia, you know, being big into the amateur and collegiate style and Olympic style wrestling. And he would always bring back Russian vodka, the really good stuff. And then he would go to boxing seminars in Cuba, and they would always give him Cuban cigars. And he would host a big party, and he'd go to the store and buy the cheapest vodka he could find and the cheapest cigars he could find, and he'd switch the labels. And then he would just watch everybody, and everybody would be sipping the vodka like, oh, this is so good. It's the best. He'd laugh at him. Great guy. He taught me so much, like knowing him and knowing Carrie and Coach Bonomo, who I met on several occasions.
It has nothing to do with athletics, but that kind of reminds me of a story of the last day on the job one summer with one of my contractor bosses where we decided we were going to give him a coffee laced with sleeping pills. So, decaf. So he would get tired and go home.
He thought he was going to stay awake and you guys put him to sleep, huh?
Yeah, exactly. And there was some powder from the pill at the bottom of the cup. I'll never forget. And I went into the closet where he's painting, and I pulled it off the shelf, and I go, if you don't drink this, I'm going to drink it, you know, and he did, sucked it all down, and then like an hour later, he's like, yeah, guys, I think I'm going to wrap it up.
Yeah, that's real.
An accident going home, so we didn't feel bad.
Yeah, it's interesting you talking about the talk how he was tied with boxing and wrestling both, which is, you know, a lot of what I'm experiencing now is coming from wrestling and the Division I wrestling and stuff like that all my life. With mixed martial arts, I'm getting introduced to a lot of different stuff, and it's good to go around and see the top guys at each sport and see, you know, what kind of tenacity they bring in their specific martial art. And, you know, it's one of the things that's just really kept me interested and really motivates me is just learning, you know, in wrestling. I had a lot of exposure to wrestling and some of the best guys, and now I'm getting a chance to see some of the best boxing coaches, you know, the head coach here at Grudge, Trevor Whitman, also some of the best guys in the world of jiu-jitsu in my camp and other camps, and also, you know, K-1 kickboxers, and just to see, you know, how everyone has their specialty. You know, you may be the man in one area, but then you go over here on the other side of the border and you see how good he is and what, you know, you can look up and try to, you know, mimic their style and become a complete mixed martial artist. There's just so much to learn. It just seems like, you know, you take in all you can, but it takes more than one lifetime to learn everything. So it's just never ending. You know, you can't never be satisfied. So it kind of reminds me of a lot of the guys I'm meeting now.
Well, in a lot of ways, wrestling is the same way. I wrestled for 3 years in high school and went 8-2 my senior year at a weight class, two weights above what I actually weighed.
That's so tough.
I learned it in a few years, but, I mean, there was just so much difference between me and, like, the state champions and New England champions and national champions. I mean, it's just these guys, they were just one out of many, and they just excelled at the sport, and they learned every possible move. And, you know, of course, there's so many basics, you know, obviously the double leg takedown, the single leg, but there's so many other different controlling moves and turning moves. My one of my favorite moves wrestling was called the Peterson roll, and it took me a while watching mixed martial arts to figure out why guys don't go for that roll in MMA.
Right,
sets you up for like an armbar. So,
right, armbars, you know, get your back taken.
Right, but I used to love that move, and I used to pull it off all the time. You know, just little things like that that. You know the dynamics of it. If somebody's high on your back, you grab their head, throw them down. You know, it helps
right.
So much in MMA. And I see it, and I watch these guys, and it's kind of amazing to me how the sport itself revolves around takedowns and wrestling control.
Right,
a guy can totally swing around if he gets a takedown. So I think anybody that decides that they can't wrestle, but they think they can get into MMA, they're wrong.
Right. Yeah. We've seen it evolve so much. You know, like when Gracie came out and showed how effective the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is, and you know, then the sport evolves, and you see certain wrestlers learning Jiu-Jitsu, and then they can, you know, go, and then you see good boxers learn good wrestling takedowns, and then they can knock out good wrestlers. It's just crazy how it all matches up, because this guy across from you may be so much better than you in one area, but you can beat him in another area, you know, just because he's the best wrestler in the world doesn't mean he's going to beat you in a fight all the time. You know, I'm definitely going to help him, and they got a lot of, you know, as wrestlers, they got, it's been real successful in MMA, but it's just evolving. It seems like each style rises up once in a while, and we all get to see that, you know, even karate with, like, the machetas and stuff like that. So I think that it's really a true representation of mixed martial arts nowadays,
right.
You know, and we know the powerhouses, but if you keep an open mind, you see these guys coming from wrestling using more and more jiu-jitsu and more kickboxing and vice versa. So I think it's what's really interesting with the sport right now.
Yeah, one thing that I've always been fascinated with watching it grow since I only started watching early in 2006 is just the way it's evolved and the way that some of the older legends just can't even compete with these younger guys coming up. Just
right.
Don't even want to. I mean, you get Randy Couture out there. Of course, he's getting older. He wants to do the movies, but even he's out there saying, "I want a novelty fight." You know,
right.
After the champions, because he knows they're just a new caliber.
Right.
Just they're coming up through the system with so many different new clues as to how it's going to go once they actually get in the cage. You know, they've got the training,
yeah.
Got the background. They've got all these professionals now in the business to help them out. And it's just grown so much over the years. And the discipline is becoming so much more well-rounded. But at the same time, I notice that fights are getting down to a more basic stand-up toe-to-toe style, a lot more striking than ever, especially in the UFC.
Right.
And it's just this whole aspect of putting on a show. You know, it's so much more than boxing. You know, because boxers get paid whether they have a defensive performance or not, sometimes equally. I mean, you look at Floyd Mayweather, he's one of the most defensive boxers in history, undefeated, you know. And they get away with it. But MMA fighters seem to have to be aggressive all the time and put on a show to stay in the big leagues. Have you seen that?
Right, yeah. I definitely see that. It's definitely about entertainment. And all of us fighters, you know, we're all looking for the newest, freshest stuff to that works. You know, no garbage or anything, but you're seeing guys like Anthony Pettis coming off the cage with flying kicks and, you know, seeing different kind of stuff coming out, and everyone's trying to outdo each other at the same time, be sound with their martial arts. So it is definitely an entertainment factor. And then you see guys who have been beat and come back and regain the momentum. And, you know, sometimes in boxing, I think once a guy gets beat a couple times, people kind of, like, write him off. And in MMA, it's a little different because you don't see too many undefeated guys because there's just so much action going on, so many different ways to be beat. So, you know, you see guys lose and then come back for a big run and then, you know, or guys who lost in the beginning come back and end up on top or, you know. So it's definitely entertaining in that way, and I think it's going to keep going that way. I think it's going to keep evolving. Guys are going to keep trying new stuff, and people are going to be interested in watching it.
Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic because, you know, there's obviously so many different ways you can take an approach. You know, it's not actually too much that's illegal as far as fighting styles. You know, I think most leagues, you can't hit the spine, you can't knee or kick a grounded opponent.
Right.
You know, you can't do the headbutts and groin.
Eye gouging, stuff like that.
Yeah, no fish hooks.
I'm happy for that. I might have to think twice if we can fish hook and eye gouge and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it was funny. We talked to Chris Lytle a few weeks ago, and he said that one of the things that he misses most is the headbutts, because he used to be able to headbutt.
Yeah, that was before my time.
He said he used it a lot.
I boxed for a lot of years. I headbutted all the time.
The inside dirty headbutt, huh?
Yeah.
You know what? I actually, you're going to get a real kick out of this. My freshman year in college, I'm boxing in the regional tournament against a kid from Penn State. And he was a short, stocky guy, kind of like myself. We were both very aggressive fighters. So I kind of assumed the role of a boxer, you know, just trying to use some outside, you know, skill and, you know, just a better technique. And he was bull rushing me and all that. And in the second round, I threw a jab, and he slipped it and stepped inside with his head completely down and ran the top of his head right into my face. My nose started gushing blood. I ended up getting pissed off and beating the living snot out of him. Didn't get the decision. I gave up too many points early. But I beat him up. And then and the next night in the regional finals, he ended up losing to a guy he had beaten earlier in the season, and we think it was because he was still kind of banged up from his fight with me the night before. So the following year, this kid graduates. His name is Schultz. So Schultz graduates, never going to get to fight him again. I step in the ring with a kid from Penn State by the name of Stoltz. So we're in there, and we'll come the third round, and it was a fight back and forth. We're both going at it. We were in a clinch. I reared my head back and headbutted him right in the face. Because if I couldn't get Schultz, I should have been going to get Stoltz.
Yeah.
I was actually in the sectional tournament in wrestling my senior year, and it kind of upset me in the long run because I had to watch my captain that I'd beaten a wrestle off in the first chance of the year. He ended up going 160. I weighed about 155, and I wrestled 171. And I'm at the sectional tournament. And he ends up going to the finals against the guy that I beat during the year. But I had one of my roughest matches of the entire year at the first setup. And it was this guy that lifted weights. He was just jacked. And everybody told me he rode his bike to school every day. And he was just, not an inch of fat on. Right, and but he fought dirty. You know, he wrestled dirty. He would chop the arm, follow through, and punch you in the nuts. So, I actually got into a little MMA scrap with him. He did that the first time. I had come so close to locking up a cradle against him in our actual matchup during the year. And oh man, just inches from locking that up and putting him away, and he just outlasted me and just was on his strength, just holding that position to keep me from clamping onto it. And so this was like a grudge match in the sectionals. It was my first match, and he chops my arm, goes right to the nuts, and I got right up, grabbed him by the back of earmuffs there, and kneed him right in the face. And the ref had seen him chop my nuts, and, you know, once he saw me do that, I looked over my coach, and my coach is freaking bright red, and the ref took a point against both of us and let it continue. But, oh, man, let him know.
There's always certain little grudge matches there, and especially in those contact sports. You always find a way, you know, especially, it's kind of funny, I think, is some of the funnest times for me is when, you know, you get, even whether it's wrestling or fighting, but, you know, you get into those grudge matches and you come out with some stitches or you come out with a busted eye, and it's almost like after you're done, the endorphins are running, you're really not feeling it, and you're like, yeah, you know, you're in the moment, and then maybe a couple hours later, then you're like, wait a second, oh, okay, now I realize what kind of fight I was just in, you know, but at the same time, you're feeling like you're so alive, you know, you're feeling the rush, a little bit of pain, everything, and you're just going, you just feel like you're so alive, you know. I think that's what I like about the contact sports, you know, for those people out there that think we're crazy, you know, there is a primal instinct in us that, you know, puts us in that stage. And for some of us risk takers, you know, we enjoy that, which is odd to some people, but I think I'm definitely one of those people.
Yeah, it's like one of those things. The caveman days, you know, violence with every caveman days. With your wife. You beat her and took her back to the, you know, that was the way it was. There was just so much to do fighting back at Don't Eat.
Right.
And I actually read an article the other day that was tracing the history of, I forget which, it was like a Roman emperor, I forget what the guy's name was, but he actually invented something where you sit face to face and you just beat each other till someone dies. That was like one of the things that the Colosseum evolved into. Two guys are sitting face to face in a chair and just punching each other to the death. So I mean, it's just something that's been in history forever, and it's, you know, it's now it's a sport, and everything goes. And I think one of the earliest forms that's closest to MMA was pankration. And even that
right. You
know, discipline still exists. People still fight that style. So,
right. One of my teammates, Nate Marquardt, was the seven-time world champion in pankration.
Mm-hmm. Now, I just wish it had come along a little bit earlier. I kind of missed it. And I probably would have been the most boxed to try it out if it went on when I was younger. But just having a wrestling and a boxing background is sometimes enough to hang in a lot of these, you know, smaller leagues. And, you know, once you even dominate one area sometimes, like if you're just particularly good at stand-up and you know how to sprawl very well, you know, you get the basics in each of the sports very well, and then you have one major strength. Sometimes you can just hack it, I find. And from the New England area go up through the ranks, just watching them at local shows. Josh Crispy is a perfect example, even though he didn't have a good last fight. I watched him in a bunch of fights in Massachusetts, and then he's in the WEC. Now he's in the UFC. And it's pretty interesting. To see the
that is very interesting.
The way it's going. But what is your ultimate goal in the sport?
You know what? Mostly, I want to represent myself, my teammates, and know my family, everyone who supports me.
I want to
be a positive ambassador for the sport because,
we just lost you.
You know, there's so many guys that I meet. Hello?
Yeah, we just lost you.
Oh, okay. Can you guys hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you now.
Yeah, I was just saying that, you know, my ultimate goal is definitely to be a world champion and fight some of the toughest guys in the world. At the same time, be a positive ambassador for the sport and come out the other side a better person. I'm going to know what I'm made of. I'm going to know a lot more about myself, you know, through the trials and tribulations. So that's my main goal, be a champion, work hard, and represent myself as a class act, as well as all the people around me that are martial artists, mixed martial artists. I've met so many good guys, you know, with college educations, very smart, lots of talented people that really motivated. And, this is a sport. Making real systematic training camps and moves, and we're all trying to be the best, and we're all feeding off each other. So, you know, I'm just glad to be a part of it, and hopefully, you know, I can be a fighter for as long as I can. But when I'm done, I definitely would love to coach and give back, whether it's in rest or whatever I can, you know, because I know that stuff takes time. So that's what I'm looking to get out of it.
All right. And what do you love most about the sport?
You know, what I love most is after a little while when I was done wrestling and I didn't have the competition in my life, is what I love most is just the camaraderie, you know, the working out, the meeting everyone in the gym and, you know, just letting that energy out. Because, you know, some of us, a lot of the guys who are fighters, we have that, and it's just inside of us building all the time, and I think you know, in people like us. So, you know, I think that's what I love most about it. And it also balances my life, you know. So that's something I'm very thankful for. You know, thankful for the ability to do it. But it just ultimately balances my life. When I came from wrestling to mixed martial arts, there was just something missing when I wasn't competing. And that's what I think it is you know, the camaraderie, the feeling of achievement, and the hard work and sweat and tears and blood that goes into it. You just... you feel so alive. You feel every emotion that, you know, anyone could feel throughout your journey. You know, you feel the rush. You feel sadness. You feel happiness. You feel triumph. You know, sometimes you feel ashamed or whatever if the performance doesn't go your way. But you always got a chance to prove yourself in victory or defeat. You know, you always have that sense of pride that you have the heart of a warrior and that you you go out there every time and everyone knows that about you. That's what I like, so. That's what completes my life.
All right. interesting answer. It's probably one of the ranks among one of the best we've heard.
Definitely make a mad for you.
Oh, can you start that over again? We lost you for a second.
Oh, sorry. Definitely an up and down road. This fighting game, but teach you a lot about yourself. Make a man out of you.
All right. And how do you think this next fight's going to go?
You know, I know he's a tough guy. He's faced a lot of tough guys. I think it's going to go. I know that I can impose my will with the skill set that I have. I believe my wrestling is top notch, and I get the test against a lot of top notch guys. And I could see myself controlling the pace of this fight and, you know, fighting my fight and not looking into it too much. But, you know, he's a former UFC guy. I'm not. Whatever. But I'm exposed to them kind of guys every day. Like I said, I just got back from Greg Jackson's camp where I faced guys of that caliber, you know, every day. So I'm not going to be out of my norm, but I'm just going to have fun. You know, people pay money to come watch what I do, and I get a chance to entertain them, so I just want to make the most of it and live in the moment and just enjoy, you know, what I'm able to do and have fun with it. You know, I care a lot, but I don't want to care too much. You know, I just want to go out there and perform, and if I do that, I know that good things will happen. I'll gain a lot of fans because I have a real exciting style, and I think that people will be happy to watch me, and that's what I'm looking to get out of this fight is, you know, some notoriety, some respect, and just something for people to say, hey, man, I like watching that kid fight because he wears his heart on his shoulder and he's coming full blast no matter what happens. And that's the way I train and that's what I prepare for. So I could see a lot of that stuff coming out in this fight and people are going to notice it, you know, no matter what.
All right. And is there anybody out there you want to give a shout-out to or say hello to?
Yeah, you know, most of all, I'd like to give a shout-out to a lot of my sponsors, people who take care of me. Relentless Fight Gear, Bomb Entertainment, Grudge Sports, where I train. And, you know, I just want to say that I'm really proud of all my teammates, everyone who bands together, because they're all there for me, and they're always trying to make me better. You can't do this on your own. So all the guys down from the Grudge, the lightweight team down there, there's a lot of superstars in that room that are in the making. Maybe a lot of people haven't heard of them yet, but, you know, I'm fighting for my life every day in there, and I know that there's more than one star that's going to emerge. And so I'm just like to say I'm real proud of that team down there, the Grudge, what we have going, and big things to come out of there. So, you know, for everyone to keep an eye out.
All right. And any final thoughts before we take off here?
No, I'd just like to thank you guys for having me. I really appreciate it. I love talking MMA with anybody. You know, it's my life. So thanks to you guys. I really appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah.
All right. Good luck to you.
It's always good.
Thanks, I appreciate it.
It's always good talking to somebody who's you know, appreciates the whole training aspect and all that. And fellow wrestler, you know, I didn't really take it that far. I did my fair share of it in high school, and people underestimate it. I think, you know, they boo sometimes when the fight goes to the ground or when guys wrestle too much. But once you've actually done it, you know, it just takes such a toll on you to train to do it and to actually get into matches and, you know, face tough opponents. And people don't realize how the cardiovascular, you know, strength,
right,
body from doing it in general, and just the strategy and the difficulty, and, you know, how hard you have to train. And, you know, we were one of the hardest training teams in the whole league the whole time I wrestled. You know, we were one of the best known teams in Massachusetts. So,
right,
you know, you always had that standard to live up to, too. You know, they'd show you the motivational videos with guys like Dan Gable, and, you know, he'd be like, wow, you know, this is an amazing sport.
Definitely, yeah.
And it's such a backbone of MMA that, you know, it always seems like you see the best fighters have a wrestling background, or, you know, it's just because of the training aspect of wrestling that prepared them to be good fighters.
Exactly, the tenacity that's there from wrestlers is something that shines through in MMA.
Yeah. And actually, when I wrestled the one semester, I wrestled the half a semester before I fell off a roof at college, and it was probably the most brutal training regimen I've ever been through. They had us go to these stairs at a middle school that went right up into the woods, you know. And we had to do fireman's carries up and down them, and wheelbarrows, I mean, the works. And
right.
Once a week. And but it prepared you, so.
Definitely. I agree with you, you know, through all my training and even going into the other styles and stuff, wrestling is still, to me, is one of the most brutal and most taxing things. Even so, when I go to wrestling practice, still to this day, I'm going, get ready. You know, it's gonna be, you know, you're gonna get a gut check every time of wrestling practice, because it's such a unique style of martial art that just takes so much physical strength and athletic ability for you know, and as well as mental power. You know, huge part is mental power, and I think that's what wrestlers get, like you're saying, going through from high school and up. You know, if you've been a wrestler, you've pretty much seen some of the worst, you know, training and some of the hardest times. You know, I feel like still to this day, some of the old college and high school workouts I did in wrestling were right up there with some of the worst mental tests and the toughest stuff that I ever went through, you know, even to this day. So I definitely think that that's something that wrestlers learn as young wrestlers is how to be tough, and just, you know, whether you got the ability or whatever, if you've been a wrestler, you have that certain amount of toughness and willpower that it takes to even get through a practice. You know, the guys with not enough, they don't really make it through a season. They don't make it through a couple practices. They walk out the door. But the guys, you know, not even from the champions and to the other guys who just make up the team, a lot of respect for wrestlers. And, you know, not to say I don't have respect for any other martial artists, but coming from that background and seeing how they do in the MMA, and, you know, what they bring to the table, I think that's, you know, a big factor, is that that wrestling.
All right. Well, here's to many takedowns in your future.
All right. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Right,
I'm shooting for. Take care.
Great talking to you.
You're ready. Thanks. Bye.
Bye. So we're going to have Alvin Robinson next in about 8 minutes.
Okay.
So... get on your soapbox, Tony, and go.
Okay, go. What do you want me to talk about? Let me know. I can talk about a variety of topics. No, I do want to just mention a few boxing topics. We did talk a little bit earlier in the show about Timothy Bradley and Devin Alexander. Very interesting fight coming up at the end of the month. I'm excited about it. A few topics I want to hit on. It's going to be the Tony Quick Hit 3. Topic number one is, one thing I read today, and it's not confirmed yet. He says it is, but it's, from other reports, says it's not confirmed yet. February 25th, up in Canada, the, boxing return of Tommy the Duke Morrison, 42 years old, still with the whole HIV controversy. He says it's his first step into regaining the Well, he did hold the WBA heavyweight title, which I guess is one of the big four.
A movie filming too?
Could be. You never know. Tommy Gunn comes out of retirement, but you know that's it. He's got to fight. I think the guy's fighting like 3-0 or something. I just like I said, I read it very briefly. It just caught me off guard. That was the one thing I wanted to mention. Other thing was a possible fight card, which I've talked to several people about. And unfortunately, it sounds like there were some really potentially good fights on there, but the whole card has just been a mess from the start. It was supposed to be originally in early December, and I wasn't going to be able to go, obviously, because I was working every weekend. Then it got moved to January 21st, which is next Friday, down at the National Guard Armory, which, you know, I've covered some fights there before. It's always kind of interesting. The promoter of this fight card, I've been to some of his fights before, and he's no Russell Peltz, I'll tell you that. Russell Peltz, you know, great promotion, always right on top of everything. This guy, I'm not going to mention any names, his fight cards are, they're clusterfucks, to be totally honest. I went to one of his, I've gone to several of his cards. The last one I went to was in April. And I called up a couple days prior, and it was, okay, he was charging for his seats, like $100 for the ringside, and like $40 for the general admission. I'm like, well, I'm going to take the general admission. No, when the fight was at the arena down in South Philly, the former new Alhambra. And basically the difference between ringside and general admission was no more than 10 feet. And I know when I go to a lot of cards, even if I'm covering them, I'm usually milling around in the back and talking to people and all that. I'm like, I don't see 10 feet being the worth $60 additional. So I said, listen, I said, I'm covering this for Fight News Unlimited. I'd like the opportunity to bring my camera there so I can snap some photos. We already have a reporter from Fight News. I said, I know you do. And that's Kurt Wolfheimer. Kurt's a friend of mine. I don't write for Fight News. I write for Fight News Unlimited. Oh, okay. So I get there. I show up. I get my ticket. And then I was like, yeah, I need a press pass for my camera. And they're like, huh? What? I'm like, need a press pass for my camera. Greg said we'll be here. Next thing you know, they got to run over and find the guy. And then he comes back. He's, oh, yeah, here's your pass. Which they gave was a wristband. Usually they didn't give me anything to hang around my neck. So I'm sitting there, you know, watching the flight, snapping some photos. One of the guys in security comes over, and he's like, how'd you get that camera in here? Like a big, tough badass. And I look at him, and I just throw up my left hand, and I'm like, press credentials. Oh, okay. Like, douchebag. But, I mean, it's just, the whole card is usually a clusterfuck. And this one, it was supposed to be in December. Then it was supposed to be January 21st. I had some people from work that wanted to go. So I'm talking to our friend Larry Tornambi, the ring announcer, and I was like, Larry, I said, what's up with this fight card? I heard they changed the date again. Yeah, they decided to push it back a week. I'm like, well, not half my friends can't even go with the push back a week. And so as we're talking, he's like, yeah, he goes, I don't even know what I'm doing. I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, I'm like, I don't know if I'm supposed to ring announce, if I'm supposed to be a color commentator, if I'm supposed to be a reporter. I have no idea what my role is for this card. And you could tell he was pissed off. I'm like, well, you know what? Fuck it. If it's that much of a mess, I'll just go to the next one. And unfortunately, it's a shame. The very next, would have been the next day, now 6 days earlier, there's a fight card at the new Harris Casino in Chester, Pennsylvania, which is about 40 minutes from my house. I was actually working in that area about a year ago. But I have hockey tickets that day. So there's no way I can do both of them. And I got the tickets for the hockey game a couple weeks ago because my one friend, her brother, is in the military, and he's presenting the flag at mid-ice. So I wanted to go see that. So... and the guy that's doing the promotion in Chester is a guy, Joey I. And I've known Joey for a couple of years. He's a professional cut man. He's a professional trainer. Now he's doing some promotions. But he's the cut man for my good friend Chuck Masaccio. So that fight card actually looks very promising, and I would like to catch a couple of Joey I fight cards because he's a guy that I don't think it'll be a clusterfuck like this other promotion is. This is the fight that I went to in April. Three of the fights got scratched. So basically, a couple of the guys that spent those $100 ringside tickets got four fights, three four-rounders and a six-rounder. And three of the fights went the distance, and one ended in three rounds. So basically, you got 15 rounds of fighting for $100.
Mm-hmm.
That's not really very good. Christ, I went to Arturo Gatti versus Mickey Ward for $50. but that's just we got Peter Manfredo's fighting tonight. He's down to 162 pounds. I just read that briefly this afternoon. Just a few of the things I wanted to touch on before we had our next interviewer on. So, how'd I do?
Pretty damn good, right down to the freaking minute, Tony.
That's all about, baby.
All right.
And by the way, I think it's your Facebook layout.
Yeah. Got Alvin Robinson coming up right now. 9:15, he's expecting us. He's a legend. He'll have down. Gotta be on the time. My computer's assume it is.
Hello?
Alvin?
Yeah.
Hi, this is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bergeron. How's it going?
Doing good, man. How are you guys?
Good. We also have Tony the Tornado Pentacal on the phone here from Fight News Unlimited.
Hey, what's up?
Just wanted to touch base with you and talk about you got a fight coming up against Cameron Dollar, who's one of those Ultimate Fighter guys, right?
Yes, sir. February 25th here in Colorado. Should be an exciting fight, man. I can't wait to get back in there and mix it up.
All right. And you have some UFC history yourself. What was that like getting into the UFC and fighting at that level?
It was great. I mean, I've always wanted to fight the best fighters, and that's what I got. When I got there, my first fight in the UFC was against Kenny Florian. I fought George Gugel, Nate Diaz, Mark Bocek. So no easy fights, but it was a great experience, and hopefully now that they got the 145s, I'll be back, and then eventually I can move back up and try to meet those guys again down the line.
All right. And you got this fight coming up February 25th. What have you been doing to get ready for it?
Just training with the best team, I believe, in the world, at Grudge Training Center. Been training jiu-jitsu with a couple of high-level black belts with the Klein brothers, wrestling with my team of guys, Leister Bowling, the coach, and, just pushing it to the limit every day. Got Trevor Whitman, Fareed Samad, two amazing boxing stand-up coaches. You guys were just on had Salas on, Justin Salas. He's one of my main training partners, so we push each other every day.
Oh, cool. So, he was pretty good. He pretty much laid it all out there about the sport of wrestling and how we could talk a lot about that because, he has a pretty decent background in wrestling himself, so just kind of talked a lot about that. What's your major strength, would you say?
I started with wrestling, but my major strength is jiu-jitsu. I'm a black belt under Hoist Gracie. It sounds like you guys like boxing. I love boxing as well. I wish that I would have gotten into boxing at an early age, but my mom wouldn't let me.
Yeah, Tony and I were actually supposed to fight at one point in the college circuit.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what happened with that? It fell through, or?
We were in the same weight class in the Nationals, but in two different brackets. Rich lost to a guy I had beaten a few weeks prior, and I lost. I drew the defending national champion in the first round, and the guy had a foot in height and about 2 feet in reach on me.
Wow. Wow.
That year, I fought one semester for Virginia Military Institute, and I went down there that was the only time I ever did intercollegiate boxing, competitive scale, officially. You know, I had a passbook and everything. And I went 3-2, and I went all the way to the bronze medal, and nobody else at VMI went past the first round in any other division. There's two other fighters, I think, that went to the Nationals. So it was pretty interesting. I mean, it was a hardcore program, too. They didn't mess around. We ran 7 miles every Tuesday. The coach was a retired Marine who would literally run and smoke cigars with us. And he would be passing a lot of people. I remember one day it took me a long time to pass him, but I said, oh, man, I'm out of shape. With those Tuesday runs, man, they got me in real good shape, and it was probably one of the best experiences in my life to go from, just being a coach of a club team up at Norwich to going to world-class training, pretty much, in the hills of Virginia, running, turning through the hills of Virginia and learning from a true professional. I was a Marine Corps Colonel, Gordon Calkins. And so Tony and I, we were in different brackets, and we always say one day we'll get that chance again.
Sounds like you guys are going to have to do the the Rocky Balboa, Apollo Creed meet in the gym.
It's funny because, I mean, even though, I mean, I stayed involved in the sport, the way I actually got back in touch with Rich after all these years was a couple of years later. Like, I always stayed watching boxing and, you know, going to fights. I would train people in my spare time, you know, just for fun. I mean, I'm a Philadelphia guy, so I trained in a pretty hardcore Philadelphia gym for years with some really tough fighters. And I was on a boxing chat room the one day, and I made friends with a former world title challenger, a professional boxer by the name of Iceman John Scully. And he asked for my email, said anytime he would send messages out, he would copy me. And this was the days before MySpace and Facebook. And so one day he sends me an email, says, hey, a guy wrote an article about me, check it out. And I said, Rich Bergeron? I said, I remember a guy in the Nationals from VMI named Rich Bergeron, lost to Michael Jordan in the semifinals. And I said, John, how well do you know this guy? He goes, well, not really. He did an aspirin interview. I granted it. And I said, is he from VMI? He goes, no, I think he's from Connecticut or Boston. And I said, well, and he goes, I'll send an email to him. I said, yeah, because I think I was supposed to fight him. So I get an email from Rich saying, you were going to fight me? I said, Nationals, 98, you lost to Michael Jordan, and I lost to the 6'7" guy. And then we ended up talking. Next thing you know, three and a half, four years later, I'm writing for the site.
Yeah. It's a small world, that's for sure.
Yeah. I was telling Rich just a week or so ago, like, that I still stay in contact with the sport. I go to a lot of fights, and I like to train people. I like to work out. And I'm in the suburbs of Philadelphia now, so it's hard to get to the real good gyms, especially with the job that really keeps me busy. And a coworker of mine was up in an area not far from where I work, so she saw a boxing gym. I said, boxing? In that area, and so I'm going to check it out. I told Rich, I said, let me go there. Give me a week. I said, I'll be the lead trainer there.
How long did it take?
Well, you know what? I'm going there on Monday. I just found out about it just about a week ago. I told Rich, and I said, I'm going Monday. I said, like, I'm working out again now. My dad's looking, and he goes, uh-oh. He's like, the tornado's coming back. I'm like, you know, let me go there. He goes, you might walk in there, they might kick your ass. I said, yeah, right, Dad, and it won't be the first time. But you know what? I said, I'm going to go there, check it out. You know, they say they want to train people for fun and, like, you know, getting a good workout in, which boxing is a great workout. But they also want, you know, people for competition. They said you can spar there. You can put people in the amateurs or pros there. Well, that might be well and great, but I don't know what this guy's level of experience is. What I know is the fact that I've got over 200 years of knowledge that's been crammed into my little brain from the coaches that I've had. You know, one guy was involved in the sport for 60-plus years before he died. Another guy in there for 60-plus years before he died. And they trained and they taught me every little nuance about, you know, technique and all that. So this guy is a great trainer when it comes to conditioning and being in shape and heart rates and all that. I guarantee you, they would love to have my experience in training technique and game planning. So give me a week. Give me a week from Monday. I'll tell you what happens.
I mean, you can't beat that experience. That's something that, I mean, not a lot of people have. Anybody can put somebody through a workout, but you have all that experience, you put in your time, and, I mean, you pay attention to those top trainers, and that does never leave you.
Yeah, I mean, like, so some of the guys I had, and these were guys that were, like, you know, top-notch trainers in Philadelphia. The one guy that spent time training me actually worked the corner of several world title fights as an assistant, and they just taught me little things. There were things I saw in Rocky movies that I always thought were a joke, until they got done to me. Like the tying the rope between the feet or the, you know, all these little things that I thought were for the movie, and you come to find out they weren't. They were real tricks.
Yeah, I mean, they did their research for that movie. I mean, a lot of the stuff that's in the Rocky movies is real stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I'd go through that.
Now, who's been your toughest opponent over the years, Alvin? You faced a lot of tough guys and a lot of tough fights. Who would you say was the toughest of all?
I've had some tough opponents. I'd probably say one of my losses, so I'd have to go maybe Kenny Florian, I'd say, because before our fight, we kind of went through a weird situation where we were the swing fight and we ended up fighting after the main event, and that messed with my head a lot, and he was able to overcome that. And I always tell people I wasn't the only one going through it. He had to go through the same thing, but he was able to overcome it and then step in the cage and fight, you know, and put on a good show. And, you know, I was swinging at him. I was throwing punches at him, trying to take him down, and he was in there fighting, and he was able to come out with the victory. So I'd have to say Kenny is probably my toughest opponent.
Yeah, I think one of my best interviews that never saw the light of day was with Kenny backstage in Massachusetts. He shows up at all the events there, down there, and he's a local guy, you know. And I had a video interview with him, and I trusted my buddy to do the video, and none of it came out.
Oh, man.
But I took notes while I did it, thankfully, so I got it in writing, but, oh, man, it was a great interview, and his brother had just had his debut as an amateur MMA fighter that night, too. So,
just his brother fight still, or?
I'm not sure. He just looked like a natural in there. His younger brother went in there and got one of those lion's kill rear naked chokes. Leg lock. It's like, whoa, this kid is good. That whole family is into fighting. I mean, he trains with his brother and older brother, and now he's bringing his younger brother through. And I don't know if he's still kept with it, but he's good.
Yeah, I think their dad, I've seen a pre-fight before, one of the pre-fight interviews, and I think he said his dad was in judo or something, and he was really good at judo. So, I mean, it's a long line of fighters he's coming from, you know.
Mm-hmm. He hasn't done that great recently, but I think he's just one of those guys that's kind of from the old regime of MMA, you know. He still gets places on his name, and he gets good fights, and he's not what he used to be, you know. And it's tough for him because, you know, he's not the frame of, you know, those guys at that weight now. He's not that type of frame, and he has improved his boxing a little bit, but he still doesn't have the reach and the power to knock some of these guys out. And some of the old stuff that used to work for him doesn't work anymore because people are just learning to get around it.
Yeah. Well, guys are, I mean, he lost to Gray, and Gray Maynard, I mean, that guy's a tremendous fighter, especially after watching that Gray Maynard fight. He put it on Frankie in that first round pretty tough. Most guys wouldn't have been able to survive, and Maynard and Florian had a really close fight, so
yeah,
I think Kenny can still do it.
That Maynard Edgar fight was epic. probably one of the best fights I've seen in years. Just I had no complaints with the draw. I don't know about you, but you know, you could have probably given it to either guy if you looked at it a certain way, but if you looked at the whole picture, it was hard not to get a draw.
No, I agree. After the fourth round, I said to one of my buddies, I was like, it's going to be a draw because I bet Frankie will pull out the fifth round and it'll be a draw. And then first round, Maynard pulled out the third round, and then Edgar won all the rest. I couldn't believe he made it out of that first round still.
Yeah, that was
about it.
It was sort of like Brock Lesnar versus Shane Carwin there.
Yeah, it's true.
Same thing.
That is true.
So close to being stopped. They could have stopped it. They didn't.
They could have.
Went for five rounds.
If they would have stopped it, there would have been no argument from anybody in either one of those fights. I mean, so.
It was almost like Gray Maynard could have knocked him out, too, but he just was like, wow. He was just so shocked the kid was still standing. He didn't throw some punches.
Him and Gray and everybody else was shocked that he was still standing.
Yeah. Rumbling, bumbling, stumbling around the ring, in the cage.
That's what it takes to be a champion, though, and Frankie definitely shows he deserves to be the UFC champion.
Yeah, that was a great fight. I can't wait to see the next one. And now, what would you say was your greatest fight of all time?
My only UFC win against George Grigel has to be my greatest fight in his hometown. Close to 16,000 people. And
nice.
That's my favorite fight.
Yeah, that's for good reason. Well, that's a big name. It's good. Looking forward, what's your ultimate goal in the sport?
Of course, to be the world champion, to win a world championship. I'm signed with Bellator right now, so after this Cameron Dollar fight, I'm going to get into the tournament, and you know, I believe I'm going to win the tournament and then be fighting for the Bellator world championship, and then you know, eventually down the line, hopefully I can get in there and win the UFC championship too at 145 and 155.
Now, what do you think of that whole merger situation in the UFC with these lower weight classes being added?
I think it's good for the fighters that are in the UFC. The thing is, there's going to be less jobs, I think. As far as I can see, like, guys are getting cut. Good fighters are being cut, and that's going to happen. But it just seems like there's less, like, roster spots with the UFC. So it's going to be good for, like, for example, Dominic Cruz, he's the champion, Jose Aldo, the top guys of the weight classes. It's going to be good for them because they'll make more money, they'll get more face time. But then the guys that are, you know, you have like a guy, name just came to me, LC Davis. He got released from the UFC, and he's a guy that beat Javier Vasquez and some of the other top guys at 145.
They gave him one fight. He lost a split decision, and they threw him out.
Yeah, exactly. And McKeon, he's one of the top guys at 155 in one fight, and he's gone, but that's just because there's no spot available.
Yeah, I just wrote an article about that over at opposingviews.com, and I kind of think it's dangerous, you know, to do that, because the UFC can afford not to be doing stuff like that, you know? I don't understand why they just keep dropping people and acting like they have no money, because everybody knows
it. I honestly wish that they would have kept the WEC and had, 135 all the way to heavyweight, and then maybe some of the guys that they released from the UFC will go to WEC and they can work their way back, you know, as a feeder league to the UFC. And then that way there'd be more slots available.
I don't know. I think they just wanted to consolidate all them under one company. And I think a lot of people in the media, too, were calling for the WEC guys to go up to the UFC cards, because it came to be that scenario where people looked at the WEC as a feeder league, and the UFC wanted to say, all right, well, we don't want to be owning the minor leagues and the major leagues. We want to make it all the major leagues. So let somebody else go on and do some minor leagues. Maybe somebody else will come up and rise up and do that, but you know, so many other leagues out there are trading fighters and you know, going to different leagues, and the UFC isn't the be-all, end-all anymore. And they might be the most popular, they might be the ones that are making the most money and putting on the most shows, pound for pound, looked at as the best across the board, but you know, some of these other leagues, they treat their fighters well, they know what they're doing, they market them well, and, you know, it's worth working for them. And we talked to a lot of fighters that have come up and either, you know, they spent some time in the UFC or they aspire to be in the UFC, but it wouldn't kill them if they never went there. And they don't mind if they don't. It's one of those things that, hey, you know, great if you get there and great if you stay there, but it's like, there's a double standard sometimes too. You know, some guys get taken just because of their name. You know, they get taken to the absolute limit of their talents, and then when it's just like it's totally clear they can't fight anymore, then they retire. Or Dana White says they can't fight anymore.
That's true.
You know? And it kind of is like there's so many scenarios where it just makes me think. You know, I don't know whether there should be a fighters union, but there ought to be the same rules in place for some of these management people. As far as, you know, treating fighters, you know, with fraud, you know, fraudulent means, you know, and just
riding them for whatever they're worth and paying them as least as they can, you know, as little a paycheck as possible. And to think guys have to go out there and get sponsors just to have a fight in a cage, and they can't just rely on the paycheck they're going to get at the end of it, kind of troubles me. You know, because it's a completely different dynamic than boxing. In boxing, you have to train for one thing, punching and, you know, conditioning and all that stuff. But, you know, you have one aspect of your game to worry about, the stand-up. That's just one part of MMA. You have so much more to train for. You have to involve so many more professionals these days to rise through the ranks. So just kind of blows my mind that he pays guys like $3,000 a fight to fight in the UFC. When they're making money, from everything from the pay-per-view to the resale of the clips to, you know, posters and gadgets and figures and whatever they can get their hands on, they're making money on.
Honestly, having worked, having fought in the UFC, being there firsthand, of course, I wish I was still with the UFC, but they really do take care of their fighters when you're on their roster. They'll help you with medical, with bonuses and stuff like that. I mean, it sucks. It does suck that fighters are making $3,000 to fight in the UFC, but then they get the name recognition, and it really does boost your career. I mean, like for me, I'm a UFC vet, and so I use that to go out and market myself, try the promotion. Right. I'm not saying that it's right, but, I mean, you fight in the UFC, you played in the NFL, and you have a big name, you know?
So, right.
I mean, like, for
me, I used to think it was kind of a gruff point that they made themselves a lot. Dana White used to talk a lot about that, you know, how the marketing itself for the UFC has become such that, just like you said, you know, just having the UFC label or former UFC fighter boost your status in certain circles and helping you promote fights and all that stuff. But, my only beef is just, I know what kind of money they're making, and they should just pass more down to the fighters on their basic paychecks rather than have to rely on these bonuses and fight of the night things. And, you know, they made fun of the Kimbo situation against Seth Petruzzelli, telling them to keep it to a stand-up war. But I think in a lot of ways they're inspiring that in their fighters through their bonus system and through, you know, how they pay people and they keep people based on what kind of show they put on rather than how they actually fight and what kind of strategy they use or whatever, you know, or just because they lost. Sometimes they just throw people out, you know, and it's like people go, why?
That is true. I agree here.
Yeah. I don't know. It's like they're the big dogs on the block. They can do whatever they want, but I just wish they would act more responsibly sometimes. And, you know, treat people better and set that example of, like, you know, this is really how you take care of fighters who take care of you and who put you on the map, you know? And one thing I always bring up and I never get tired of talking about is when some UFC fighter we had on, I always forget who it was, but so they said to me, or both of us on the phone here, they said, you know, the sad thing is that Dana White is the most recognizable figure in MMA.
I forget who said that, but there might have been more than one guy.
Yeah. Well, most people agree with it, you know. It is kind of funny. Think about it.
I would agree with it.
Mm-hmm.
I would agree with it.
You know, and that guy was just a boxer size instructor at one point.
And the thing is, like, you get these huge fight lines, which I've said it 1,000 times, you get these huge fight cards. And so you put 10 fights on there, okay? So you have a total of 20 fighters. But then you fill out an arena of, say, 20,000 people, okay? And we'll say an average of $50 a seat. So, I mean, I'm not too good at math, but you figure however much that is. You know, 20,000 times 50, whatever. Okay, and then you have your pay-per-view buys, and you're generally getting hundreds of thousands of pay-per-view buys. Even if you don't, you might even break a million pay-per-view buys. So now you think, wow, so you figure the pay-per-view buys at, you know, $40 or $50 each, and you get a million of them. That's $50 million right there, okay? Where is all that money going? The fighters are only getting how many thousand apiece? They're not, I mean, where is all the money going?
That is true.
I think that's
for you guys are boxing guys. How did the boxers, you know, like Mayweather, making $30, $40 million one fight?
Yeah.
How do they justify that? You know what? Boxing, if it's got anything on MMA, it has the PR wing. And it has the history. And it's been there forever. And there are people all over the world who promote it. It's not just a local sport. And it's not unregulated in more than a few handful of places, you know. Just about everywhere in the world could stage a boxing match. The drop of a dime if they wanted to. So
that proves Tony's point is, I mean, boxers are making these $30, $40 million paydays, and then you got the highest paid MMA fighter is making maybe what $500,000. So,
but that's the only reason I see for boxing, you know, make boxers making more money. That's the only justification, because maybe they outsell in certain areas of the world that MMA hasn't even reached yet. And it's just that historical thing, you know. That's the way it's always been. The best boxers in the world, the guys that generate the most hype and buzz and, you know, just the business around both guys, Manny and Floyd, if they ever fought, which I don't think they will. And I don't think that fight will get made, at least not for another 2 years, I don't think, because they have some major issues to work out first, both of them. Yeah. But, you know, I think boxing is going to save itself in other ways, because a lot of boxers are going to go out there and say, well, we don't need to see Floyd Mayweather versus Manny Pacquiao. I want to fight Manny Pacquiao.
Yeah, right.
Because Floyd's the one that's just kind of sitting back and waiting for things to develop, you know, not picking another opponent and obviously having all the legal issues going on right now. And Manny's the one that's just plowing forward. And, you know, people can say what they want about him picking Shane Mosley, but what is he going to do? Nobody else that's, you know, really craving for that fight has stepped up in a big way other than Shane, so they took it.
Shane, you can't ever count Shane out. That's one of my all-time favorite fighters right there, and you can never count him out in a fight. That guy's tough, and he's a vet. So.
But the UFC's problem, I think, is they pay certain guys six-figure paychecks. Like, I think Chuck Liddell actually made more money than Rich Franklin when he got knocked out in his last fight. And Rich Franklin broke his arm. It was one of the most thrilling fights I ever seen, because Chuck Liddell was at his best. I mean, he had been training hard for that fight, and then Rich Franklin had his arm broken and come back from it and knew he had to win or, you know, risk that thing flaring up right away and he wouldn't be able to use it in the next round. And he did it, you know, and he got paid like almost, I think, half of what Liddell got paid, just based on his name and his history. So, I don't know. I just think they need to spread the love. Get more equal opportunity.
Coming from a fighter, I wish they would too.
Yeah. But anyway, looking at your next fight, what do you think is this guy's greatest threat?
He's a tough guy. He's like fearless. He likes to scrap. So I just got to bring my A game and be ready on my feet. Got to be ready to wrestle and got to be ready to hit the mat. Dollar is a little bit of a well-rounded fighter, so I just got to be ready to go wherever the fight goes.
All right, and you were saying something about a tournament?
Yeah, the Bellator tournament. That's going to be the 145-pound tournament this season to crown the tournament champion and then see who faces the champion, which is Joe Warren right now.
And what do you think about that style with the tournaments and stuff? Do you think that helps market the sport?
I love it. I mean, it's kind of like the Super Six in boxing, or, you know, like you guys were talking a lot about wrestling. I mean, the best fighter is going to come out on top, because you have to win to move forward. It's not like you have a big name, like you were saying earlier. You have a big name and automatically, boom, you have a title fight. You have to get in there and fight your way to the championship and earn your and earning keep.
Cool. Well, does anybody you want to give a shout out to or thank out there?
Of course, all my fans, everybody that has stuck by me through my fight career. Thank you guys for having me on the show, of course. Rudge Fight Team, Fine Brothers Jiu-Jitsu, Horse Gracie Jiu-Jitsu, In Doubt is one of my sponsors. Premier MMA Warehouse is one of my sponsors. And hopefully I'm not forgetting anybody. Ricky, my manager. And, yeah, everybody, thanks for all your support.
All right. Well, it's been great talking to you. And, do you have any final thoughts that you want to pass on?
Just stay tuned to 2011. Hopefully the kids are going to get back on track and keep working towards a world championship. And hopefully by the end of the year, I'll be wearing that gold around my waist. And thanks again, guys, for having me on the show.
No problem. Great having you. Anytime.
All right.
Well, you have a good night, Alvin. And it's been interesting. And this is one of the first episodes of the year we had two guests on, and it's kind of interesting. We both trained together, so there you go. It's a nice slice of mixed martial arts for the listening public.
Yeah. Anytime, guys. Anytime you guys need guests, feel free to give us a call.
All right. Keep up the good work.
Great.
Stick to jam.
Yeah.
So that's Alvin Robinson. I guess we should go briefly through the schedule we got for Boxrec here. Yeah, Alvin was pretty forthright, I think. another guy who agrees with the Dana White is the most recognizable figure in him. I gotta find out who that was who said that. I keep citing it. It's gotta be in the podcast somewhere. Oh, man. So how bad did you get hit with the snowstorm down there in Philly?
Not too bad. I was coming out with Houston. Yesterday headed up to Boston to help the storm. He works with an electrical company. He's one of their welders. He's helping for some of the people that are out of power. I ended up going to work. I was happy about that yesterday, but I went down, and I was the only person to make it in. Office personnel, a couple of the managers were there, but I was there. You know, most of the people they ain't what I am. You know.
So, how about them Eagles?
Yeah. I'm getting started. I used foul language the other day.
Yeah. I saw it coming. I predicted. I went 0-2 on Saturday, but I predicted 2-0 on Sunday. I knew the Packers were going to do it.
What
pissed me off the most was the Jets and Colts. You know, just the clock management at the end. You know, just sucked.
Yeah.
But I was happy for Carroll, even though I picked the freaking Saints to beat him.
Yeah. Well, come on. Who didn't pick the Saints to win that game?
Oh. It would have been the upset of the year to pick that one. That would have been good money, betting.
Right.
What can you do? You know, we got about 15 inches of snow up here where I am in New Hampshire. It was the fluffy stuff. Wasn't bad. Well, we got Peter Manfredo Jr. fighting this Friday down in Key West, Florida. 36-6 with 20 knockouts, fighting Daniel Edouard on ESPN.
Edouard is the guy that we were supposed to interview. We never did.
Sensation. That ought to be interesting.
The Haitian sensation. 23-3, 14 knockouts with 2 draws. And also on the card, Edwin La Bamba Rodriguez, who's from the Massachusetts area. Super middleweight, who's 17-0, 13 knockouts, fighting Aaron Pryor Jr., who's 15-2, 11 knockouts.
Very good fight. Oh, man, you know
who else I see you
kick
a world title fight is Ronald Hearns. Who? Well, fucking Felix Sturm, who actually kicked the shit out of Oscar De La Hoya in 2004. He's been in the division. Okay. Let's see if we have anything else. Starting to get into boxing time.
That was
a big news that
I was looking at today. Interesting
stuff,
as always.
I don't see anything else. No big title fights here until next week. Let's see what we got for MMA. Oh, I don't know about. I don't know if you heard about the MMA fighter who wanted to fight Barack Obama. Did you hear about that?
No.
Secret Service after him. And now the UFC. I don't know his. He's an assistant wrestling coach, and now his high school suspended him for his comments about Barack Obama. Yeah, I guess the guy was like a medical practitioner. He doesn't just do MMA. You know, he has a career in medicine. So he has a real strong opinion about the healthcare system that's been passed. You know, the bill that's just passed, now they're talking about repealing. It's crazy. But, you know, after his last win in the Octagon, he said something about fighting Barack Obama. He wanted to fight Barack Obama next. So they sent the Secret Service to his house to interrogate him. So... obviously, it generated a lot of controversy. Now his high school suspended him, and they want to have a hearing about it. But he's getting so much news because of it, and he's just getting a platform to talk about his views. So, more power to him. And I love it because it's free speech, you know. Secret Service can come to your house all day long. You know, you meant that as a joke. You're not out there like seriously proposing to fight the president. Come on. You know, how stupid do you think anybody is? Just because the guy's a fighter, you know, doesn't mean he really meant it. He's just talking. Calling out Obama. But there's nothing they can do, you know. It's not a real threat. It was a joke. And it was a satire joke, you know. There was some kind of seriousness behind it politically, but, you know, you want to fight him politically, and that's what he's doing. Basically, that's what they gave him the power to do by giving him the media for it. And by taking it that seriously, they would send Secret Service agents out to, you know, put pressure on the guy. Come on. It's a little weak. But he's embarrassed about it now, and, you know, the high school's making a big deal about it. So that's kind of an interesting story. Jacob Volkman. Look him up. This weekend we get Fight Night Round 12, Combat at the Cabaret in Washington, Anna Cortez, Washington. On the 14th, what's that, tomorrow?
What? 14th,
tomorrow. And we got CW6 Challenger in Cookstown County, Tyrone, Northern Ireland on tomorrow night. We got fights in the Philippines. We got Cebu 6 Respect in Cebu City. Who's your FC6 New Year's nemesis going on in Indiana? Valparaiso. Brace for War 7 is going on Saturday in Canberra, Australia. 100% Fight 4 going on at Carpentier Hall in Paris, France on Saturday. Centurion Mixed Martial Arts in Brazil. If you're in Brazil. Rogue Warrior Fighting in Redding, California at the One River Casino on Saturday. Rumble on the Ridge 16 from Snoqualmie, Washington. The Snoqualmie Casino. The Brawl at the Snoqual. Saturday night, Fight Night 14 in Kelso, Washington at Hardtail's Bar and Grill. Respect in the Cage has an event in Pomona, California. Pride and Glory Ultimate Cage Battles at the Ohio Nets Sport Complex in Parma, Ohio. Also Saturday, Midwest Cage Full Force Championships 31 with Hy-Vee Hall in Des Moines, Iowa. Ringside MMA Rising Star in Montreal, Quebec, Saturday. Gladiator Elite Cage Fighting 20 in Warsaw, Indiana. Not Warsaw, Poland. Man, there's a lot of events this weekend. We got two more. Annihilation 31 in Colorado Springs. It's going to be Annihilation. That's NMEF. Is that league? Nations Collide in Florence, Kentucky on Saturday at the Midwest Sports Complex. That's it. That's the list. We got 4 minutes left, Tony.
All right.
What are we going to talk about?
Well, I mean, nothing else really to talk much about. I'm going to get him on check with my dad. He's still recovering from surgery today. He's doing good.
What happened? What happened
to Vinny? Oh, yeah, Vinny's got a big mouth, you know. No, a few weeks ago, we were, fighting around with him, and his mouth open, and we saw a growth on there on the roof of his mouth, and obviously very concerned about it. So he had his annual checkup at the vet anyway, to get his heartworm pills and shit. So the vet took a look at it and was like, "I never knew this could happen." But obviously, I'm not a vet and I'm not a doctor. I'm just what I am. But sometimes in dogs, the dogs will have a tooth growing on the roof of their mouth. And actually was growing in there, kind of was getting jammed up and was forming this growth. So they went in today, they cut it open, they removed the growth, they removed the only part of the tooth they could. So it was concerning, because I thought I was going to take him in at 9 o'clock. Boom, they would knock it out and have it done. I'd be either my dad would be picking him up or I would be taking him home, and I'd be back at work by 11. Should I drop off at 9 o'clock? I'm like, okay, drop off. We'll see you at around 5. I'm like, what? Well, we've got a couple appointments. We've got to put them in a cage for a little bit. Got a couple appointments, and then, we're going to knock them out, and it's going to take a few hours. I'm like,
hey, we got to knock them out. We got to sedate them,
So, obviously, I'm at work today. I'm like, I was, just shitting bricks all at work. Then finally my dad called me. He went down there at 5:15 and finally got him. But they said he was a ball of fire when he came out of there, so he's doing well. Just a little bit of pain, a little bit of soreness, but the Vin Man is doing well. Other than that, I really don't have much else to talk about until next week.
All right, yeah. We only had 90 seconds left anyway, so adios, amigos, and thanks
later
for stopping by. We're going to promote this episode. It's one of the last ones we do as a free show, so.
All right.
Sponsors next week here. And go to ZionShop.com out there, folks. ZionShop.com is the latest website. It's promoting us. ZionShop.com.
All right. Check it out.
And, even though I also operate ZionSucks.com, I support this guy. And if you know me, you know the story, but I'll explain it at a later date. Anyway, thanks for stopping by. We had Alvin Robinson and Justin Salas on tonight. Great interviews. And next week we'll have some great guests too. Possibly a boxer, possibly another couple MMA guys. We'll see. But great job, and see you next week.